Chaplain Lieutenant Colonel Sean Phillips with us. The Phillips have been visiting with us for about a year now, I guess, as they're able. He has duties because he's a chaplain. Sometimes he's preaching at the base, but when they're able, they're with us, and it's been a privilege to get to know them a little bit. Linda is from Greenville and knew the Privets from back even before they came here, back when they were at Hampton Park. So they're not strangers to the Privets or even this ministry. We are privileged to have them and looking forward to Brother Phillips bringing us the word, Chaplain Phillips bringing us the word this morning on this Veterans Day Sunday. So you come ahead, sir.
Sir, it is a privilege to be here with you. It's a privilege to find a faithful church. Believe me, I've been in this area. I was stationed here in the 90s at Langley Air Force Base. I wore a different uniform, believe it or not. And I still love my days in the Air Force. I see those planes fly over, and I still bleed blue. And so this area is just fantastic. When we heard that we were coming back to this area, we were very excited because we knew the area well. We knew there was a plethora of local churches. When I was here as an airman, single guy, I went to Bethel Baptist down in Hampton. Gene Parisher was the pastor then, and he's now with the Lord. But so we, you know, life changes, and being married, we kind of had to reinvestigate, well, where is it that God is calling us to be outside of the chapel when we have opportunity, and where can we fit in and find good fellowship, and he led us here, and it was an easy decision. To come here. I have a chaplain friend from the Air Force who pastors a church down off Harpersville Road in Newport News, and thought, well, that'd be it. We went there, and it just, you know, that just, you didn't sense, that you didn't have that sense of this is where God has you, but when we walked in here, it was obvious. So we're happy to be here. I'm going to be retiring in April, and so as I transition, hopefully you'll see more of us, and we can be here more often. So, you know, Armistice Day, you've heard. By the way, we're going to be in 1 Peter 5. If you want to go there, that's our text, those first seven verses, and that's where we'll eventually park. But thinking about Armistice Day, it's a commemoration of that ceasefire in 1918 between the Allied nations and Germany in World War I. And so this armistice that was signed at 0545 on the 11th day of the 11th month in 1918, provided that armistice. Fighting still went on for quite a while, but then the Treaty of Versailles is what eventually ended World War I. And so it's a national holiday in France and many allied nations. Many different areas have a similar day. Some countries and associated nations they've changed it from Armistice Day to Remembrance Day, and the United States chose Veterans Day. So it really goes back to celebrating peace and having a time when you can say, wow, we survived maybe the war to end all wars, and we know that's to be false, but it's still a time to celebrate peace. And I think our veterans, it's appropriate that it's really our veterans that present that peaceful attitude, ready to defend, but yet with the hope of peace, never wanting to go to war, but knowing that that ability and capability oftentimes preserves the peace. I was in Paris many years ago, and the first time I was there, I saw on the side, I can't remember if it was a subway or a bus, but I saw a seat or two that were reserved, and it was reserved for disabled ex-service members, at least that's the translation. Literally, it was mutilés de guerre, those who were mutilated by war. And so the seats were reserved for them, and those simple signs were a sobering reminder that we're surrounded by people who have fought battles, who have scars. They fought bravely to preserve freedom, but not without a cost. But not every disabled ex-service member has lost an arm or a leg or an eye or been burned ostensibly. Some of those mutilations are invisible to our eyes. and we're surrounded by people to our left and to our right, and save a place for them. Whether it's on the subway or in your heart, or maybe on the seat right next to you. Nor can we look into the hearts and minds of fellow believers beside us, maybe in the pew, or that visitor who comes, somebody who maybe attends a certain event that you have here, a program, and you've never seen them before. We don't know the battle scars that they bring with them. Maybe what battles they fought in their soul, the wounds that they have suffered, what demons they have defeated. And save a place for them and for each other. Because I can look in your eyes and I can grip your hand and smile on Sunday, but I don't really know what's going on underneath. And I don't know what kind of a morning you may have had, or what kind of a week you may have had, or the fact that you're still doing battle in some way, in some serious form. So we save a seat for veterans of faith. And this is the emphasis that I want to have. Not just veterans who wear the uniform. And we think of veterans in many ways, first responders. We even think of what sports and athletes as they're a veteran athlete. They're not in their rookie season. Some of us are maybe in our rookie season. You know, hating that first battle, that first time that Satan really attacks. And we're in that rookie season and we need a veteran to come alongside us, a veteran of faith. Who will show us the way, who will help us, who will help us assuage the fiery darts that Satan is always launching. And a veteran is somebody who has experience and has found wisdom in that experience. Someone who has seen more than we can really ever know. Maybe you have an aging grandfather, or you have somebody in your family who served in Vietnam, Korea, maybe even World War II. And they don't talk about it, right? Or you heard of those kind of people. And there's a reason they don't talk about it. But they have experience. And we don't know why Uncle Jack does this or that, but there's an experience that causes him to do things this way. Or maybe Sister Mary or whoever it might be, because they have an experience. And they have battle scars and they have war wounds. But yet, hopefully, they found wisdom in that. And they found a way to hone that in with the Scriptures to be able to come. To be able, then, to lead and help others. We have veterans in our midst. I would probably, you know, as I look out, I'd go, most of us probably are veterans. Not too many in a rookie season. Y'all have had experience. You've done battle with God at different times. Maybe opposed to him at some times. And hopefully he's turned, you know, kind of like Jacob wrestling with God. And then you come out on the other side. And you come out better for it because you've been refined by the fire. The dross has been skimmed off. And you've come forth as gold. Now, not just military vets, but Christian vets. That's you. Those are the people in here. Even young folks, you may be going through some times and Satan is testing you or been tested in school in the sixth grade. Who knows where it may have been? And that was your rookie season. And now you're starting to learn. And you have influence with those fourth graders because now you're a big high school student in their eyes. You've arrived. They can't wait to get where you are. And you're the veteran to them. It's not just us old gray-haired guys or no-haired guys. It'd be fine if it all just fell out. It would save me 30 seconds every morning. Linda says, no, 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 no. But you have somebody to whom you can be a veteran. No matter your age, no matter your office, no matter your position. Because you've grown in grace. So when I think of veterans, I think that they've had training, right? They've been through some stuff. They've had intelligence imparted upon them. There's been discipline, those hard skills of knowing what to do in their craft. They've had experience by using those skills, perhaps in battle, perhaps in exercises, and they've withstood some battle scars from it. They also know leadership. They know some of the soft skills of how to interact with people. And they also have followership, humility, loyalty. Loyalty goes a long way, brothers and sisters. It's hard to find loyal people. Because as soon as the tide turns, sometimes they want to go on greener pastures and find some other place. So those things of training, experience, leadership, loyalty, followership. To me, those are all marks of a veteran. And we're going to see these here as now we work through a little bit of this passage. I know this passage is commonly for people in church leadership because it speaks of elders. It speaks of people who are taking oversight. And those words are where we get like Presbyterian, the Presbyteros, and the Episcopos, and the Episcopalian. We get those kind of church structures. And that's all well and good. But those in those leadership positions, you have to do that to be in that leadership position. You as a veteran want to do that. You should be doing that as a Christian, as a believer. You ought to be doing things. The pastor has to do these things. You ought to be. I ought to be doing these things as a Christian veteran. So, in 1 Peter 5, we read opening verse, "The elders which are among you, I exhort, who am also an elder and a witness of the sufferings of Christ, and also a partaker of the glory that should be revealed." See, Peter is saying, I'm not somebody who's different from you. You're an elder, I'm an elder. We've both been through the battle. We both served in OIF-1 or whatever it was. We both served in Iraq and Afghanistan or Vietnam or wherever. We have both had our rookie seasons with the NFL, whatever it might be. I'm not talking to somebody who's different from you. I'm talking to somebody who's just like you, as somebody who's got the battle scars and the war wounds. I'm a veteran just like you are. And I want to encourage you with this. Feed the flock of God. This is an interesting word. It's a word really for a shepherd, somebody who cares for somebody, who gives them support, sustains somebody, who watches over others. And so he says this, feed the flock of God which is among you. That's all of you. And it's not just your pastor or youth pastor or somebody in a position. You. Peter's talking to me. He's talking to you. You. Feed the flock that is among you. Feed each other. Look out for each other. Lead and help where you can. Feed the flock of God which is among you, taking the oversight thereof. It's interesting that this, the way this is translated in taking the oversight, not like something to be grasped, not like, oh, I have to launch on this and take it. It is, literally the word comes from when we talk about a microscope, we talk about looking at something. The Greek word is skopeo or skopos, where we get like a scope to look at something. And so we could get microscope. And this has then a prefix of episcopos, where we get Episcopalian. But this is like looking around, looking beside you, in front and back and all around. And where is this flock of God? Looking them over. Not just the grip and grin, like I mentioned. I can look in your eyes, I can grip your hand, I can smile, but do I really know what's going on in your heart and soul? Do I know you well enough? And I haven't gotten there yet with a lot of you. Some of you, I talk and we have side conversations and I love that. And hopefully, we'll, as time goes on, you get to know each other. And you all probably know each other more than I even understand. But there's a real need to look and go, where can I help this other person? Maybe I have experience. Maybe I've lost a child early in childbirth. And I've learned how to deal with that. And now there's a young mother who's through the same situation. I need to look around to see if there's somebody dealing with that. Maybe I can come alongside and help. Maybe somebody's gone through financial, just going through really tough times financially. That was my rookie season, was finances. I was 24 years old at Bethel Baptist Church. I had just come into the Air Force. Now, I heard about God. I read about God. I had been to Vacation Bible School. I had gone forward to the altar as like a four-year-old. Well, I wasn't that young. I was about 7 years old. And I was visiting the church. That's all I ever did. My family, we were the CNE Christians, you know, Christmas. And we went to the local Baptist church, the big Baptist church in Canton, Ohio. And it was just overwhelming. So I started going with friends, and I went to the Catholic Church, the Presbyterian Church, you name it. I went to a full gospel church. I was even in a play, like an Easter play as a little kid in a full gospel, hooting and hollering type church. I didn't know what was going on. But I remember at 7 years old, the pastor said, if you've ever been lost, you need to come forward. And I remembered I was lost in the supermarket one time. I couldn't find my mom, so I went forward. I mean, as a seven-year-old, you just take it literally, right? I was lost, so I came forward. And somebody talked to me about all this stuff with giving my heart to Jesus, and I'm thinking, I don't know about this. I need my heart, don't I? I mean, I don't want to give it away. I kind of need that. And so there was some kind of profession, I don't know. But at 24 years old, here I come to the Air Force, and there's two different NCOs I could have been assigned under. One was complete heathen. The other was a deacon in his local church. And I got assigned to one who was a deacon in his local church. His name was Bill Myers. Still remember Bill and Mary and their two little cute daughters. And I was talking to Bill and said, hey, I need to find a good local church. Because I was in my rookie season. Was trying to figure this thing out of what I had done at 7 years old and if this was really meaning anything. And so I asked him, I said, I just need to find a good church. And he goes, well, no, you can just come to church with me. So I did. And that's where I nailed it down. I said, okay, the light went up to 100 watts of what faith was really about, that it's not just about some profession. I still needed to be saved. I still, because my life hadn't had any indication. My life had gone the other route, and I had spent money foolishly. I had no idea how to use credit cards. It was like $25,000 in debt in 1991 as a 24-year-old guy, A1C in the United States Air Force. I didn't have money to buy toothpaste. And all of a sudden, I'm at church, and so I've confessed my sin, asked Jesus into my heart. We got the faith thing done, settled that. I had to go through determining, do I need to be baptized now? Because I had been baptized already as a young child. And so we had that discussion. Said, you know, were you a believer when you were baptized? I said, well, I don't know. Well, we probably ought to make it right. Let's do the double dunk, and let's just do it in front of everybody. I said, well, I think I want to, because this is where I claim now my faith. And I understand what my faith is. I didn't understand back then. So I understand now. So fine, let's do that. And it was great. So baptized down at Bethel Baptist Church, and it was a wonderful day. But then all of a sudden, Satan, this is where he attacks. Day one, with your finances. Sean, you need to tithe. And I don't even have money for toothpaste. How am I going to tithe? I ain't got that 10%. So I started talking with people. I mean, I was thinking of filing bankruptcy. $25,000, unsecured debt. I didn't know what to do. Thankfully, I lived in the dorms. I had three squares and a hot cot, you know, and I was good to go. But started talking with a friend of mine. I found a veteran of faith. And I said, hey, I'm thinking about this or that. And he's like, nope, shouldn't do bankruptcy. Don't do it. I didn't like that answer. So I thought, bankruptcy, well, I just get out of it, you know. U.S. has deep pockets. We can get past this. So I went to another person. You know what you do when you don't get the answer you want? You go ask somebody else, right? So I went and asked somebody else. Nope, don't do it. Don't do bankruptcy. You know, just have faith. Well, that's twice. All right, I'm going to try one more time. I went to another veteran. Went back to my buddy Bill Myers, who led me to this church, my NCO. And we started talking. Nope, Sean, don't do it. Okay. I think God's telling me a message here. I'm getting it three times. So I did. I committed to it. I didn't have enough faith for 10%, but I committed to 3%. And God was faithful. I said, you know what? I can increase this. And eventually, you know, because I didn't know any different, the magic number, I thought that 10% has to be 10%. And we could have a whole other discussion on that. But that was, for me at that time, that was my level of faith and my level of knowledge, my rookie season. And I'm trying to figure this out. So eventually got up to 10%, and now I guess it's just way beyond that because I don't even calculate it. It's just, you just give. And God was faithful, and within a couple years, when we got married, I was still in debt, paying off student loans, all that stuff. We had more months than money. And it's how I do with that. Y'all been there, right? I see some other veterans been through that rookie season. But God was faithful. And ever since about 1996, when I paid off the final student loan and paid off all that unsecured debt, I've been debt-free ever since. Just to God's glory. Money has just, that was, again, that was my rookie season. I could talk all morning about the blessings of that. But that's where it took somebody to come alongside and give me some guidance, a veteran of faith to come through that. That person fed the flock. That person fed me. That person kind of came alongside and sought out, said, you're going through some times. I was traveling up home, and a friend of mine handed me $400 in an envelope, said, I know you're traveling up to see your family over the holidays. I know you don't have much. Here you go. And just took care of that. That's how God works. And I'm not trying to say any kind of mystic thing or, you need a $1,000 vow and send this in and God will bless them. I'm not being that kind of a guy. But God is faithful. You cannot outgive God. It just can't be done. Because he owns flocks and cattle on 1,000 hills. And we don't know the resources he has out there to give to you, not just financially, but to go through that struggle, maybe of a wayward child, maybe of making poor decisions. Some of our wounds are self-inflicted. I don't even want to go into how many are self-inflicted. But God is faithful even to those. So they fed the flock. I was one of the flock, and they fed me. They took that oversight. They looked around to see who's hurting. And they noticed this young airman who was still learning, who was trying to figure things out. And right after that, God attacked in another area. And I could, go through and say, well, this, or not God, Satan attacked in other areas. And God was faithful. And it was just became, it becomes easier. And all of a sudden, you're the veteran. Because you've been through the battle. And you are that elder, as Peter puts it here. You're that person who is looking to feed and support someone else. And he talks about why not to, and you do it willingly, not for some kind of filthy lucre, as it says there, not for some lucrative need, not for position or for profit or for personal interest. I think the NCO Creed has something like that. I don't do it for profit or promotion or personal interest. And that's where our NCOs, they fall right in here. They're doing it willingly. And so to be a veteran, I'd say you need to be a non-commissioned officer. Us officers, can't trust. You can trust the NCOs because they know what they're doing. Neither is being lords over God's heritage, but being and samples to the flock. And I looked on this word, example, a sample, somebody that people can look to. And the word actually is talking about something that kind of like that when you mint a coin, you have like the archetype, you have that type, and then it stamps into some kind of metal. That's what this word is talking about, that you've been imprinted and molded into an image of God, into something that people can look to and go, that's the objective. That's the example. That's the person. That's the young man. That's the old man, that whoever it is. That's the young lady who's got it right. And I need to look there and maybe follow that person because they're now an example to the flock. And then when the chief shepherd shall appear, you receive a crown of glory that fadeth not away. Let me move now to the opposite side. You are leaders many times as the veteran. But sometimes even as the veteran at 56 years old, I still feel like I'm in my rookie season sometimes. When life slaps you in the face and you go, I wasn't expecting that and I don't know how to handle it. And now I've got to be somebody who's looking, because I haven't dealt with that. I haven't dealt with that kind of, so I look around and go, who maybe has dealt with this situation that I'm now encountering for the first time? And they can be the veteran. They don't have to be older than I am. It could be a younger person that has been through a couple things. Maybe they're really good with buying a house. And I need to learn all those things about buying a house. They're a young real estate agent. And I need to learn from them about, that just a practical thing. But also maybe somebody I've seen that has got control over their tongue. They figured out how to speak kindly. And I never hear a foul or cross word or anything come out of their mouth. And I'm sure they could. I'm sure they want to at times. But you know what? They just always have grace upon their lips. Let your speech be seasoned with salt, that kind of thing. And I see that it is, that grace is on their lips all the time. And maybe I haven't gotten control over my tongue, and I need to kind of just talk with a younger person who's got it figured out. because I realized this is yet now something I haven't dealt with, as even though I'm a veteran and a veteran of faith. So likewise, ye younger, submit yourselves unto your elders. And I would kind of, you know, I'm going to change up the words, you newbies, in a certain area. You may not be a newbie to faith, but you're a newbie in this particular need. And so submit yourself to the veteran, somebody who has experienced those kind of things, who is an example, and I need to submit to them. We like us in the military, we in the military, we like this word submit. Hupatasso, it's you know, this military term of hierarchy and having everything in its right place and subordination and following rules and all those kind of things. Submit yourself to an elder. But really be subject one to another, he goes on to say. It's not just about being subject to one person. It's we're all really subject one to another because we all are wanting to be veterans of faith. We're all needing to be examples. We're all needing to lead in this way. And so I'm going to submit one to another. Kind of like, remember the old, I'm going to date myself now. The old cartoon with the two chipmunks, you know, Chip and Dale. You know, and they were always like, oh, no, you go first. Oh, no, please, after you. You know, they just would never get anywhere because they're just wanting to be so gracious to each other. And I think of that whenever I see this word of one another, which is in the Bible a lot of times, of one anothering, of just being so gracious and courteous, preferring one another. I think I've read that somewhere, in honor of preferring one another, right? Preferring the household of God. That's another sermon. Ye likewise be subject one to another, and be clothed with humility. There's a lot of action words in this passage, and that clothing goes back to not necessarily just the putting on and putting off of garments as we read in Paul's literature in Ephesians, but it's really, it goes back to the days way back in slavery of the slave would have a sash or some kind of a piece of cloth on their vestment that identified them as a slave instead of a freeman. And it's using that same thing, or in the same way that you might have to tie two pieces of cloth or two materials together and you yoke them together. And that's what this word is talking about, that you knot yourself up, you clothe yourself, you bind yourself to humility. That humility should not be separate from you, that you are clothed with this kind of humility because God resists the proud. If I didn't go to different people and talk about my financial situation, I said, you know what, I can handle this on my own. I don't think I'd be debt-free today. I think I'd be in bigger problems. And it was humbling to have to talk to somebody that I have mismanaged my finances and I have been foolish enough to spend. I was paying credit with credit. It was that bad. I was paying rent with credit. I was paying off one credit with another credit. It was just going, it was a shell game trying to keep above board. Sometimes we have to humble ourselves and admit, I have a problem with what I view on the computer. Or I have a problem with what comes out of my mouth. I have a problem with my attitude. In my mid-50s, I should not have this kind of spirit. Well, now I need to go to somebody and say, I really have a problem with this. Or be willing to hear it from somebody else and say, I think you might need help in this area. And I'm doing it with grace. I'm doing it out of like Galatians, where it says, if you catch a brother in a fault, that ye who, you know, in the spirit of meek, you are spiritual, in the spirit of meekness, that you should approach them. Those kind of things. But I need to be willing to hear that from somebody and humble myself to say that somebody is caring and loving me enough to be a veteran in my life to say, I want to help you with this. And I have to, that's humbling. Nobody wants to do that. Nobody wants to hear that. But that's what Peter is calling us to do. And in these final verses, he gives why it's so difficult. He says, humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time, casting all your care upon him because he cares for you. Why would it cause you concern? Why would you have to care about being humble? Because it hurts. Because it's mortifying. Because we ought to know better by some time. You know, the words that we see and hear where the apostle is talking about, I would have brought you something more like meat, but you are still on milk. Those are humbling words to hear from a leader of the church to go, you know, I wanted to bring you much more when you should be eating hard meat. You're just still on milk. Ooh, that's hard to hear. And it's hard to hear these kind of humbling words. So that would bring about care. It would bring about concern in my life. And I want to guard myself about this concern. Or that I'm going to submit to somebody else because I want to be in charge. Especially as a younger person. No, I don't want to submit to these kind of things. I don't want to submit to my parents. I don't want to submit to my teachers. I don't want to, et cetera, et cetera. Because I want to be in charge. And if I'm not in charge, then things are out of control. And so that causes me concern. And he says, cast all your cares and concerns upon him. Let him fight that battle, knowing that you will come through on the other side refined and better for it. Why? Because he cares for you. In the same way that we've all been talking about, or that Peter's been talking about, feeding the flock, looking about for each other, caring for one another, submitting to one another, being in harmony for the betterment of the church, and the examples that this church or the body of Christ is going to present outside of these walls, then we have to submit here because he cares for you. And you will be able to cast all your concern. I know it brings concern in my life whenever I have to say, I need to change. I know at different times that maybe Linda and I have kind of looked at things differently. And you've probably done that with your spouse or your kids as well. You look at things a little differently. And it's a little difficult at the moment. And I usually have to wait about 10 minutes. Because I get all ramped up inside. And I'm just being honest with you. Don't look at me like you're any different. Y'all did the same thing. You want to start. But take about 10 minutes. And a little bit later, I go, you know, I think she might have been right. I think I was wrong. And it takes me about 10 minutes to realize that I need to apologize. But at the moment, I don't want to do that. Because I haven't cast all my care. I want to be in charge. I don't want to say I was wrong. I don't feel I was wrong. Well, obviously I was. So, I say all that. And that's a lot in there. There's a lot of action verbs. A lot of action to do. And I encourage you, again, with the same words that I started with, keep a seat open to your left and to your right for that veteran. Maybe that rookie who's visiting this flock for the first time. Maybe it's that rookie you meet out at the grocery store, you meet along the way. I'll leave you with this one last story. I have in my pocket a couple of these little cards that I use to give out. They're like the size, half the size of a business card. I don't know where they come from. Pop open cards is what they are. And it's just got, you know, a bunch of little different pictures on it. And you pop it open and there's usually a verse. It's just a Bible verse. And so I'll give them out to different soldiers different times. I'll just walk along and I say, pick one. You know. And they pick one. I say, you can share it with me if you want or not. And a lot of times it's something meaningful. Sometimes they don't share. And on a few occasions they're like, eh. But I was talking with this soldier one time. Female soldier. This is my last assignment in Germany. She was a medic. And I was over at the hospital for something. And I noticed on her arm she had a verse tattooed on her arm. It was out of Isaiah 43:2, when you pass through the waters, I will be with you. That, not the whole thing, but just a short version of it. And so we started talking about it. I find that tattoos oftentimes with military, there's a story behind the tattoo. And so it's a way to start talking with somebody. And then you kind of turn the conversation wherever that goes. You see how that works, right? You find something common. Be all things to all men, you know, those kind of things out of 1 Corinthians. And so this is just that opportunity to talk about that. Well, we were talking a long time, and we had that. And then finally, when I was leaving, I said, here, you know, pick one. And I said, you can share as you want. Her eyes got this big. She goes, you'll never believe this. It was Isaiah 43:2. Go figure. I said, God showed up, you know, just like that. And then we were able to have a conversation a little bit more about faith, about who God really is. I was just at a veterans event Friday down in Raleigh. Did the same thing, just talking with, you know, people in the church and that, and had these out on the desk. And there was a guy who came up to show me his. And it was, you know, I will create in you a clean heart. I will give you a new heart. He had just had heart transplant surgery. And so he related it, you know, right to that. He said, this was, you know, just the message that God, you know, was putting back in him. Now, it doesn't happen like that all the time, and I'm not saying there's anything mystical about this, but it's just a way that I find out, like, where somebody is maybe in their spiritual journey. I find out who, you know, kind of who they are, where they're, what's their temperature gauge, and where they might be in terms of a veteran or a rookie that need help. And it's just a way to kind of leave that seat open next to me that I might be able to have a conversation with them. So I hope it's been an encouragement to you. I hope these passages, this passage may now resonate in your heart throughout the day, is that you are not just veterans in uniform. It's not just the veterans who have been through the sports teams or been on first responders. We're all veterans of faith. And we have a story, and we can be an example and an encouragement to others. I'll turn back over to Pastor and see how he wants to close the service and leave a seat fit to you. Thank you, Pastor.
Thank you for that good message. You know, as I was listening and thinking, and then there's a verse in there that says, when the chief shepherd shall appear, we will appear with him in glory. I'm thinking about being humble and being an example and all that, and Christ is all that. He's the one that is example of being an elder, of being a veteran, if you will. And so as we close this morning, I want us to sing number 375 in our hymn book. It won't be on the screen, so you'll need your book.